Our message today comes from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 to 14. The heading there is Moses and the Burning Bush. Let us hear the word of God. Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. Moses said to God, Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, What is his name? Then what shall I tell them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you.
Thanks, Hermanus. If I had to give today's sermon a title, which I don't normally do, I was thinking about this morning when I had a moment of clear thought. It would be something like, But God. But God. Now, I'll explain to you, hopefully it makes sense at the end of my long tirade of loose ideas that I hopefully can land this plane. But you've got Moses, a guy tending his father-in-law's sheep. Now, Moses in Acts 7, if you go and read you get a summary of how the Jews looked at him. The Jews saw him as somebody who was mighty in word and deed, skilled and trained in the wisdom of Egypt, you know, who knew he was the deliverer of Israel. But it wasn't the picture that you saw there. Here you saw a guy who had nothing to give, nothing to offer, not to God, not to people. He had spent 40 years in the desert. He was old. He had lost all the skills that he had learned. Even himself said, well, I've started stuttering. I'm no longer powerful in word. I've got a stuttering problem. He ended up realizing, being a fugitive as well, murderer, had a criminal record, and he sort of seemed to have made peace with the fact that his life, his destiny, is to look after sheep. That's it. That's what he's going to do. And it's in there, in that process, which got a familiar, eerie familiarity with the hiddenness in the life of Joseph. For those of you who weren't here, we've spent weeks looking at the life of Joseph. And one of the things that's quite interesting is that in the life of Joseph, God was hidden. Just like in the history of Israel, there's a place, a time where it seems like he's not, you don't see him. And Moses had 40 years in the desert, similarly seeming like God is hidden. And he came to the same place that Joseph came. Joseph came to the end of himself. He realized it's not about him. The language the Bible uses is he died to himself. And Moses got to the same point. And then you had the burning bush, where the angel of God cries out to Moses. And before I go into where I want to go, I need to pull out one point here that I need to make. And it's this. As long as you and I think that God can use us, we're not ready to be used. But the moment you realize there's nothing in you that he can use, then you're ready to be used. And I say this with all due respect to all you beautiful, amazing people. You look nice, you smell nice. But if you look around this room, I mean to say, it's quite clear that most of us are disqualified. You know, think about it. It's sort of like I come to you and I say to you, your destiny in God. You'll go like, well, I'm too old. I don't have enough money, or I don't have enough skills, I don't have enough abilities, or I'm the wrong gender, or the wrong race, or whatever it might be. We've got a long list of stuff that we think disqualifies us. That says, no, God can use anybody but me. Yeah? I think that would be a fair assumption if I were to come and put you, like the doom, and he comes and says, vessel, can God use you? The first thing will be, let me just cover my wickets here. That's where we are. But that's the best place to be. Because, like we saw in Joseph's story and a little bit in Moses' story, in our relationship with God, we always look for the answered prayer. We look for the ending. We look for, oh, God did this. You know, how amazing is that? But what we miss very often is that the answered prayer is the easy thing. It's not like heaven dims its light, its lights, or drops the electricity levels like Eskom do. You know, in heaven, when God answers our prayer, the problem God has got is for us to have the character and the ability to carry the weight of that answered prayer. In Moses' case, he was the guy who knew, I'm going to be the deliverer of Israel. And he had to carry the weight, the burden of that answered prayer, of that leadership, which he knew he had. But in order for him to do that, he had to come to the place in the hiddenness of God, in the desert, where it was no longer about him. Because God is more interested in the process than in the end result. Does that make sense? But now here's the thing. Two parts that we can see clearly from scriptures that he uses for this process, for the process to change us, to transform us, is on the one side the hiddenness, but on the other side also fire, the burning bush. I was during the holidays when I had long leave. You know, for those of you who don't know what that means, is I'm basically on holiday for the rest of the year. I don't have to do much. But anyway, one evening I made a bonfire. We've got like a drum, and I filled that thing with wood, and I just sat there. But it was freezing cold outside. But I sat looking at that fire, and it was a holy moment for me. Because, I don't know, Nuck calls it his Kalahari TV or something like that, Bosveld TV, something like that. But when you sit and you look at that fire, it is so, so beautiful. It's fantastic. But because it was so cold, and because I made such a big fire, I had to position myself accurately. Because I needed the heat, but I couldn't get too close because otherwise that thing will burn you. And it's so apt, it's so accurate why God is depicted all through scriptures as fire. Because there's a beauty to him. There's an absolute, there's awe, there's amazing. But you come too close, you die. He's dangerous. He's God. He's not our buddy. He's and you can hear it. You can hear it in people who've encountered him. You can hear it in the language they use. They don't often talk about this stuff. Ooh, I just made my steps. Go figure. So I'm exciting. Yes. You can hear it in the way people talk. The language, the type of language that they use, it encapsulates, it carries the beauty of God, but also the severity of God. Now, this week I stumbled across something on the internet from a philosopher. Colin, you probably will know him, Blaise Pascal. I don't know if you've heard of him. So this guy, let's just say he was a bit more clever than most of us. He was a mathematician, physicist, turns out theologian a little bit as well, philosopher, inventor. And when he died, they found in his jacket, sewn into his jacket, was a piece of parchment, which nobody knew because he never shared this. He wrote it into his diary, into his memoirs, and he tore that page out and he sewed it into his jacket. But listen to what he wrote there. In the year of the Lord, 1654, Monday, November 23, from 10:30 in the evening until 12:30, fire. God of Abram, God of Isaac, God of Jacob, not of philosophers nor of scholars, certitude, feeling, joy, peace. God of Jesus Christ, my God and thy God shall be my God. Where does this guy start off? Start off with fire. He had an encounter with God, with the severity of God. Something that you don't theorize about. It's not the God of philosophers and the God of scholars, of clever people. It's something that you experience. And it's something that you experience in both beauty and severity. This is amazing, but you know it can kill you at the same time. And that is the part of the process that God uses in terms of this, how shall I put this? The process that he uses to shape us to be able to carry the weight of our answered prayers. The fire of God. And what happened was when Moses got confronted with this fire, he didn't just roll over, but there was a commission. See, because when you realize in the hiddenness of God, I've got nothing to offer, and you encounter the fire of God, what you hear, one of the first things that you always hear is God's commissioning. See, because God said to Moses, I've heard the cries of my people. I've come down to save them, but I'm sending you. I'm going to do something, but I'm going to do it through you. When you experience God, there's always commissioning. You know who Martin Luther was? Very clever guy. So I'm quoting clever guys just to make up, to sound intelligent this morning. But Luther was a professor in theology. When he was a light, he nearly got struck by lightning. So it scared the living daylights out of him. So he decided there's one way that he should dedicate his life. So he became a professor in theology. And he sort of like, you know, people came from all over Europe to study under him because he was that clever. He's just the guy. And then he encountered the grace of God. And the moment he encountered the grace of God, guess what happened? He turned into someone who turned the whole world upside down. Up until that point, he was Professor Luther. But after he had the encounter, the experience of the grace of God, it changed his life. Because the moment we encounter God, we realize it's not about us, and you're like an Isaiah where you hear God say, who can I send? There's always a commissioning part. But Moses, when he hears the commissioning part, he's got questions. First question is, who am I? Who the hell, Lord, do you think am I? I'm a nobody. Why can you send me? Who am I? I don't qualify. And then what is so amazing is God answers him. And he answers him with Hebrew that just doesn't make sense. The root for Yahweh is to be. It's to be. So the translators, all of us struggle. We sort of like, okay, so what am I supposed to do with this? So they translate it as I am. I am who I am. You know, trying to give words to this. But I think it is a brilliant choice because it opens this whole, shall we say, possibility of continuous revelation of God, because he is the one who says, I am gracious, I am faithful, I am slow to anger, I am love. But in the case of Moses and you and me, when Moses says to him, who am I and who are you? And God says, I am with you. Moses, you are the one that I choose to be with. And this is how you'll know. I'll bring you back to Mount Sinai. I'll bring you back here. This is how you will know that I am with you. I choose you. And that's the good news. That is the absolute brilliantly good news of today. Because you see, it's not like God needs you and me. I know some of you are clever and skillful. To an extent. But it's not like he needs us. He wants us, but he doesn't need us. But it's in this place where he comes and he says, listen here, I want you. You are the one that I choose to be with. And that is the good news. But it comes, it gets cemented in our hearts through the process of hiddenness and fire. That we get to experience the wonder of God saying, I want to be with you. You're the one that I choose. But now the question becomes, how do we experience God? How do we position ourselves? And if you look at Moses' story, the first thing you have to do is you have to go and have a look. Okay, so what you need to understand is the burning bush was not on SABC, Facebook, TikTok. What else are there? Instagram, whatever. It wasn't on your twit face. You know, it wasn't on social media. It was there, and it was not so imposing that Moses could not ignore it. It was not like a billboard thing. Moses was walking past. He saw the bush burning. Apparently, that wasn't that weird in those days. Probably because it's in the desert and people smoke weird stuff in the desert. So I'm not sure. I've got no theory as to why that was the case. But he saw the bush. But it only caught his eye that the bush is not burning out. And then Moses decided to go and have a look. He made the turn to go and have a look. You and I cannot experience God unless we stop with the busyness of our lives, stop and go and have a look. And it's not this massive invitation, it's not this in-your-face thing. You have to actually, I wonder why that is. Let me just go and investigate. When we do that, that's where we position ourselves. But the first thing you realize is, if you take the time out, you have to take off your shoes. You have to take off your shoes. Now, I haven't said anything controversial for about 3 weeks, so I'm going to say something now which might upset some of you, especially you more holy people. Okay? But it's one of the things that baffles my mind, where people only talk in terms of spending time with God in terms of the beauty. They never speak about the severity. It's the weirdest thing. I mean, say you take the time, okay? So you take the time. I'm going to go and have a look. So you separate yourself, and you're going to spend the time with God. But nobody talks about the fact that they struggle to pray 5 minutes. When they sit there, they struggle to get their mind sort of like just quiet down, you know? Sort of, and you're sitting there and you think, just damn, I should actually do this and the next. They don't talk about the fact that you sit there, and just as you sit there, you realize, oh, I'm so screwed because I did this, this, and this, and the next thing. They don't talk about how exposed you are when you come into the presence of God. They just tell about the visions of heaven and the angels and how beautiful and peaceful and amazing and empowering it is. But there's a reality. When you go to God into His presence, there's a place where it's uncomfortable because you're confronted with who you are. And it's horrible. But nobody talks about it. All we hear is the nice sermons. You know, you're supposed to. You know. And then the rest of us go like, oh, damn. I know I'm supposed to have quiet time, but it's actually not lekker. It's uncomfortable. And we force ourselves into that place. And some of us force. The rest of us actually just avoid it altogether. Because, you know, we like to read the Bible and get the promises. We like that. It's like, oh, going to bless you, going to make you filthy rich. You're going to be handsome one day, you know, sort of like you're going to lose fat. I'm not sure whatever the promises are that you get in the Bible and how you interpret it. But we don't want to be confronted with a fire, with a severity. And then what we do is we actually, we confuse grace with laxity. Because if we take the courage to lean into that moment and actually confront the discomfort, if we're not trying to avoid it, but we lean into it and we begin to realize that we are, I'm not sure whether I can use this word in church, that we are screwed, you know, that we don't measure up. We're broken, we're sinful. If I'm not talking the royal we, and I'm also not talking that religious we, because you know how people will come to you and say to you, yeah, we're all sinners, but you know, they talk rubbish. That's said with so much pride, you know, I'm a sinner saved by grace. But look how amazing I am, because I actually can pray 24 hours a day. You know, that's rubbish. If we lean into that naked, uncomfortable, I'm broken, that's where you discover grace. That's where you discover grace. And grace then is not laxity. It's not a question of God going, oh, shit, it's all right. Boys will be boys, you know. Prostitutes will be prostitutes. It's all right. It doesn't do that. Grace is when you and I get something we didn't deserve given to us by someone who's not obligated to give it to us. And grace, in our case, is God who said, for your sin I give my son. I don't have to, but I choose it because I want you. That's grace. Corinthians 1, Colossians 1, 6, Marianne and I talked about it a little bit yesterday. That's what we talk about when we go for coffee. We talk about scriptures because we're holy. And then she tells me what an idiot I am. No, I'm just messing. No. But we were having this conversation actually yesterday. Colossians 1:6. Paul writes to them and he says to them, chaps, the gospel has gone out into the world and you guys heard it, but it's beginning to bear fruit. It's bearing fruit. And he says, but it bears fruit because you heard it and you understand. The word there, the Greek word there is epignosko. You connected the dots. You've got a deep knowledge. Connecting the dots of God's grace in truth. We talk about being born again. What does that mean? I don't know about you, but I need pictures. Because these churchy terms, sort of like, yeah, whatever. You're born again. It's like, I feel like Nicodemus. Do I have to get back into my mom? If you've seen how much bigger I am than her now, she's the one that's going to be crying. But the thing is, she's going to pray against me being born again. But the thing about it is, sorry, I shouldn't go there. Born again, it practically means Colossians 1:6. It's when you are confronted with yourself, and I'm not talking again religious make fake, you know, pretense. I'm talking you really know that you're a bugger up. And then you are confronted by God's grace. Where you sit there and you're aware, I'm a coward. I'm a cheater. I'm a thief. You can call it whatever your thing is. You can put it there. This is who I am. And I've got no ability to change it. But God. And that understanding of but God is something that you and I have to ponder, we have to think about it, we have to invest in it. It doesn't come upon you like a seizure. But when the admitting, the brutal honesty of your own depravity meets the grace of God, a reaction takes place that Scripture refers to as being born again. Then you are changed. Then you begin to realize, but hang on, I am this person. This is the truth about me. I don't actually want to have quiet time. Can you believe it that the Dominie would say something like that? But I was just speaking on your behalf. You know? No. You could say that, God, I've got nothing in me that actually desires to spend time with you. Nothing. But then the grace. But God. That's where the process of sanctification takes place. That is what Paul says we should invest in. And if you want to experience the fire of God, that's where you have to focus. You have to stop all the stuff, or take a break from all the stuff that keeps you so busy. You have to go and have a look. But you need to be willing to take off your sandals because you're going to be confronted with who you are. And I don't mean in a nice way, truly, that horrible, I make myself sick way. But there, you find the grace of God. That is why being a Christian is the most amazing, amazing, amazing thing there is. Because we don't have to hide. We know how screwed we are. It's like people come to you're doing that wrong. Yeah, I know. I know, but God. We also don't judge people. I don't look down on them. Because we are the ones who are confronted at the burning bush by the fire of God with ourselves. So what you see around you, the worst things, the guys you see on television, all those things, they're amateurs compared to me. But God. Does it make sense?